This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Open for Business. I'm Audrey Raj. Now, being a producer and presenter at BFM, there's a lot of prompting and nudging and digging in order to get the best story out of your guests. But sometimes, just sometimes, you get a guest that shines. The kind where you just get to sit back, relax, and just listen, absorb, and learn. And that is exactly the kind of guest Navin Karu is. A veteran in the food business, but someone who is constantly innovating and raising the standards in the F&B industry, Navin Karu is all about keeping it real. Success for the chef and CEO of Ocean Flare Group has had a domino effect, but he's quick to remind you that the good times come with their fair share of challenges. Here's a recording of our conversation on the evolution of the Ocean Flare Group, where Navin talks about the extent of the issues F&B businesses have to contend with today, from ethical sourcing of meats and produce to the lobbying for MSG and navigating a dishonest supply chain. And also, what exactly could but should go into a great plate of fried rice. Take it away, Navin.
No problem. Hi, thank you for having me. My name is Navin Karu, and I'm the chef and owner of Ocean Flare Group. And Ocean Flare Group, there's four physical brands that we have. One being our first baby being Vin's Restaurant and Bar in Taman Tun Dr. Ismail, followed by The Food Company, which is a butchery and deli in Taman Tun Dr. Ismail. And then we opened Velvet Lounge, which is a lounge and bar on the first floor of Vin's, combined with our central kitchen, which we opened on the first floor because we started to cook on top of each other's heads and there wasn't enough room in our current kitchen. Then down the line from that, we opened Manja KL, which is in Old Malaya, and that is situated in a 100-year-old building. Further to that, there was a lot of requests for catering. So we had a lot of trouble deciding how we're going to cater and from which outlet we're going to cater. So we developed this business called, a brand called Sago. And Sago basically does food and does specialized events from Vin's and from Manja and takes certain items from the food company. So it's really a collective of these outlets. So Sago is basically our premium catering service. We also like to storm people's houses, kitchens, offices, and we generally do a lot of live cooking for them. Beyond that, we have Big Boys Barbecue, which is our barbecue arm, is our barbecue catering arm. So it's very badass. It's live cooking, charcoal grill, all about meat, burgers and dogs to get people to come and try different products. And we do that every 2 weeks in front of the food company. And we also cook at people's houses and we do it for events as well. So these are the current brands and businesses that we're running. And it's all under Ocean Flare Group, and our corporate office is at Oval Damansara on the 20th floor. And that's the management team. And my wife heads the office. She handles all the finance, admin, and all the fun stuff while I go out and play with food.
So you sound like a pretty busy man. Like, the Ocean Flare Group is a full-fledged, like, F&B group. Why F&B for you?
That's a good question. I don't think I'd be able to do anything else, to be honest. I was in the corporate world. I was in Shell. But somehow there was always this affinity towards food. And my mom showed us a lot of love from food. And everything was about food, you know, in terms of when we were growing up, you know, for our birthday, she would make the best biryani she could, you know. That was, you know, if she made biryani for you, that means you're in the good books and she loves you and, you know, it's and that's how it goes, you know. And it was like that. And we were entertaining. We were in London. My parents were in Singapore. My father was with the government and we moved countries. So we were in London. We were in Germany. From Germany, we came back to Malaysia, went back to London. And then I was born in Germany. So throughout the travels, I tried different food. And because my mom cooked a lot at home because couldn't get Indian food or South Indian food outside the house. I mean, it wasn't as globalized as now. So a lot of this, a lot of home cooking started. And I was able to see, like, even some sandwiches to even barbecues. And she would make a lot of things. And also, I think growing up, we didn't go out to restaurants so much because I think our early days, cash was an issue. So a lot of cooking, even a lot of the Western meals when we came back to Malaysia was made by my mom. So I was able to look at what she does, and like from her pies, her lasagnas, her pastas, and a lot of inspiration came from around what she did. And then I would also get my hands wet and dirty. And I think I knew that I would want to celebrate my love for food by making these, creating memories for people. And I told myself, I have to. The minute I was in college, I knew that I needed to start a restaurant, no matter what. And if I didn't have money to start a restaurant, I think I would even have, I would even spoke to my mom about both of us selling curry puff on the corner of in Tamantun. And so that was how I got inspired for, and the family as well, no? Even my aunties, aunts, uncles, everything's about food. When during lunch, they'll talk about what's happening for dinner. I couldn't have moved far from that.
Sounds very Malaysian. When did you start Vince? That was your first baby, right?
Vince was the first baby. July 14th, 2010, 8 p.m.
Wow, down to the time. Okay, and the menu and the kind of food that you served was all inspired by mom's dishes?
No, so for Vince was basically, every business was an inspiration from a certain part of my life. So Vince was an extension of my life in Europe. So when, especially in London, when I grew up in London, there was a lot of dishes that we came by. And there was this one particular restaurant that we used to go to in Golders Green near Hampstead Heath. And most of it was Italian-inspired cuisine. But with a different touch, you know. So we had the pescatores, we had the marinaras, we had the carbonaras, we had all these sort of dishes. And when I was in Malaysia, I didn't really see, and in London, you had these great pubs, you know, these gastro pubs, these sort of old style, old restaurants. And I never saw anything like that here, because when I started 9 years ago, I think there was restaurants like The Ship and
Victoria Station,
yeah. and what's the other one in Subang?
Windmill.
Swensons and Windmill.
Yeah.
Okay, so there wasn't any sort of new age restaurants that were coming up. So I said, we got to bring some of the soul and some of the, you know, to TTDI and or to Malaysia or to KL. So that's how the concept of Vin started. And what we wanted to do, a gastropub, restaurant, Italian-inspired cuisine, but have some local dishes as well. So that was the whole concept, with a bar and with a full wine selection as well. So sort of a casual, semi-upper casual place where you can come in, still come in your shorts, but still come for a date sort of thing. And I think it really caught people's attention, and it really picked up. And very happy with where Vince was also rated number one restaurant for, I think, a year. Organic reviews, yeah, completely, because TripAdvisor checks.
And then from Vince, you moved on to?
From Vince, so what happened, what the problem was, I realized in Vince, we were having issues with our supply. A lot of businesses, F&B businesses in Malaysia, there's a lot of ethical issues that we faced with suppliers, with some suppliers. I'm not going to say all suppliers, but some suppliers, because they would start switching the products. For example, they would give us, they would say that frozen squid, they would say we're giving us fresh squid when they're giving us frozen squid. Or they would even lie on the type of meat that, you know, there's two types of meat that come in, chilled, which is by airplane, and frozen that comes in by sea. So obviously, chilled is much fresher, much more expensive. Frozen is not as fresh, and it's cheaper and it's slightly tougher. So that's basically the two differences. So what happened is a lot of suppliers we noticed would defrost our meat and then would repackage it and then sell it as
fresh.
Sell it as fresh, or, you know, make it look like it's fresh when it's actually meant to be in the frozen form. Nothing wrong with frozen products, but you don't tell people, charge them for chilled and serve them frozen. So there was a lot of this going on. And it even goes to the extent of the meat, you know. So they would sell buffalo meat as mutton. Mm. And, you know, the poor Hindus and Buddhists who don't eat beef, and they actually eat buffalo meat. I mean, there's a big controversy, you know. I mean, I'm, I, I don't know whether it surfaced in the papers, and so this is things that I felt very strongly about. And when I and the more research I did on this, I said, look, I'm going to preserve things in the natural way. That means if it served this way, it served this way. And if we're going to say it's this, it's airflow, it's airflow. If it's frozen, it's frozen. Let's not twist the lines too much. I mean, certain gray area is okay, but if you want, you're going to start lying and cheating people. So that's how the food company came about, to protect the integrity of the produce to the restaurant and to also serve the community where I live, to have proper products and be informed and educate the public.
Does the food company actually supply meat to other restaurants?
Yes, but just to specialized restaurants, because there are a lot of restaurants also that don't demand certain quality of product. You know, there's many varieties of chicken you get. There's chicken from China, there's chicken, local chicken, there's antibiotic-free chicken. So our price points they're not expensive, they're not cheap. I would say they're average, in the middle. So for restaurants to purchase this, there are only a handful of restaurants that we only mainly supply our restaurants with a handful of other restaurants. And wholesale, we only do mainly wholesale for our brands because we know what we're buying. So therefore, you know, we know how to communicate the product to our own chefs and things like that. But what we do is we serve the community a lot. Most of our business come from the retail business. So we serve the community in Tamantun. In fact, a lot of people come from around different areas, as far as Setialam, as far as Rawang, to buy, because they know what they're getting is extremely fresh. Mm. And we don't defrost things, try to put chemicals on it, or we don't color our meats. And most of our products are grass-fed, grass-fed lamb, grass-fed beef. So we are very careful with our sourcing. And we make sure we try to source as much as we can locally. And we try to support micro entrepreneurs. And anybody who wants an opportunity, who has a decent product, who's ethically sourced their product, and the packaging is ethical, and we feel that they are passionate about it, we do support them. So right now we're supporting a kombucha brand, a lady who makes her own kombucha. We're supporting a lady who makes her own pestos. We're supporting somebody who brings in specialized products from Italy, Sicily specifically, which you can't find in anywhere else in the world except the food company. So we're starting to grow these sort of brands, and also, you know, to build micro entrepreneurs and bring them on board with us and partner up with them and see how we can work together. That's something I'm very passionate about.
You make this sound so easy. Like you said, you're working with someone from Sicily and you're working from someone on so many different things. But how do you find these people? And how do you, you know, is there like a QC before you say, okay, this is what I will put out in the food company?
That's a very good question. Because I don't know, you know, because I think I've met so many people over the years. Every time somebody talks about food, somebody recommends me. So what happens is In my food company or in my house, you would see foie gras, you'd see salami from Italy, you'd see artichokes from, you know, you'd see products from all over the world, and you'll see cheeses, you'll see breads, you'll see In fact, if you go to our office pantry, you'd see tons of food inside because people are sending me samples all the time. And then what I'll do is I'll go through these samples, try to take tiny ones and then sample and then see what are homemade, what is more artisan, what is fresh, and what is from micro entrepreneurs. And then we hook up together. And I'm very casual, so they can always pick up the phone, call me, and just chat and see. Because I started from nothing. I did not have a family business. I didn't have, I had a mentor. My parents were my mentor. My brother was my mentor. But I didn't have anybody in this industry. So I know how hard is it to break into this industry. It's not an industry where you can go and get consultants and all, because it's not so matured in Malaysia as it is now. So a lot of it, to break into this business, it's very challenging. And first of all, to have a quality product and to be able to make money and not to be cheated by people, these are the challenges. So I always want to help. I feel if you help people, I think it's a nice thing to do. I don't know, it's just in my nature to see if you've got something deserving that you believe in it, I will find a way to help you.
We're going to take a quick break for some messages right now, but when we come back, Navin shares the formula to finding the right people to manage your F&B businesses. Stay tuned to Open for Business, BFM 89.9.
Business-filled minds, BFM 89.9.
This is Open for Business. I'm Audrey Raj, and I am speaking with Chef and CEO of Ocean Flare Group, Navin Karu. So before the break, Navin was talking to us about how business at his first F&B outlet, Vin's Restaurant and Bar, just took off, forcing him to rethink how he was sourcing for his meats and produce, which then led to the birth of his butchery and deli, the food company, also located in Taman Tun Dr. Ismail. We continue our chat on the evolution of the Ocean Flare Group, next covering his third F&B entity, the Velvet Lounge.
So the size of our kitchen in Vin's, you should have seen it. I think it was had a width of 5 feet, 5 feet, and had a length of maybe 10 or 15 feet. And it was, because it was my first restaurant, right? So I designed it. I didn't know how much.
You just design it for yourself? So just you and one other person to be in that
space?
I think
so. I could barely cross the kitchen when I was there and when I was working in the kitchen. And it was insane. You know, it was hot. It had the grill right in front of your face. It was the design, of course. It wasn't a Michelin star kitchen, I can tell you that. And so we decided, okay, we have to expand. There's not enough space in Vin's. We need space. There's a big drinking crowd that we have. And downstairs, a restaurant. The concept of restaurant and bar was very confusing. I mean, not confusing, because you'd have families. At the same time, you'll have people having a really good time. So we said, okay, why not create Velvet Lounge? And Velvet Lounge will be the Vin's bar, will be the extension of Vin's as a bar and a lounge where people can smoke cigars, have their single malt, have their gins, have their cocktails. So we decided, and we sort of make it sort of private, make it sort of a regulars thing. So we put a key code access, you know, put in a special code. You got to call me to get the code. And then at the same time, half of Velvet Lounge was our central kitchen. So we built our dream kitchen, you know, with a walk-in chiller, with all the specialized ovens, the hot air system, the fresh share system, and you know, so that we could do proper catering, we could cater for future business, and if we open any other outlet, we could also use this kitchen as a support kitchen for any other business. So Velvet Lounge was sort of given birth from Vin's for smoking, for drinks, for lounge, and for an extra kitchen. Can you believe at the same time we were developing We developed Velvet Lounge, our central kitchen, our office, our corporate office, because we used to work behind the butcher shop. Mm. So behind the food company, there was a little table, my wife and the admin, and they would be working there. And, you know, I thought to myself, how are we going to be a reputable brand in the future if we don't have a corporate office? So we built our corporate office at the same time. And we built the corporate office to be at full capacity. But we didn't have the staff to fill up the office at that point in time. So we built an office. And our office has a bar and it has a small kitchen. And, we have that vibe of a restaurant and bar going on. And it's very casual and nice. And, you know, people walk around, work artwork all over the place. So,
what's the staff strength at right now?
62 at the moment.
Wow.
Yeah, staff strength, 62, yeah.
Okay, and the majority of the staff cover operations, or what do they do?
I think at the management level, we have about 10 to 12 management staff. So we have our HR, we have our admin, we have our finance, we have our brand strategists and marketing, we have our digital media, we have our accounts, we have events and PR. I think that's sort of... And then I think... I just fit in wherever I need to, you know. I wouldn't call myself a CEO. I wouldn't call myself I would call myself an empowerer. So I feel I go and empower people to be the best of themselves. And that's how I like to work. I don't like to sit on top and say, okay, everything come back to me. I try not to. Initially, when they're new, they need to understand the soul of the business. But then I try to empower them to make decisions and even make mistakes if they have to, because then they're going to learn. Then it enables me to move around and go travel and see things and get inspiration, because those creative juices also need to be flowing.
So Vin's in Taman Tun, the food company in Taman Tun, then you had the Velvet Lounge above Vin's in Taman Tun, your corporate office at the Oval.
In Taman Tun.
And all of a sudden you decide to go all the way to the heart of KL and open Manja.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. True. Everybody asked me that question. You see, I don't think anywhere in KL you can find I mean, it's not, no, nobody's, it's called what? I think it's even called, it's called Serani Row. And the road is called Lorong Hicks. Mm. And it belongs to Life Records. It was a record studio. Before that, you had people living there. Just imagine a long row of houses, and each house used to situate about 30 people. When we went there to view the site, I was very hesitant at first because it's out of my comfort zone. I live in Taman Tun. My business is in Taman Tun. My office is in Taman Tun. It's easy to operate in Taman Tun. And I don't like to travel. I hate the jam. So I thought, I was lazy, you know. I said, everything can, you know, it's here and it's easy. So I told myself, and then when I saw this beautiful row, and the dream, you know, the guy who was developing the row, he came and spoke to me. His name is Kanna from Pampas Group. So he came and spoke to me, and we started chatting, and he shared his vision, and then I said, okay, you know what? I think this is going to be an amazing opportunity. He wants to bring 7 specialized restaurants under the foothill of the KL Tower, on the foothill of the KL Tower, and he's got a lease for 15 years and all these kind of things. And I said, you know, I think that sounds amazing. Let's do it. And at that time, so when I went back to the team and I went back and I was just chatting with everybody, and then it was like, oh, so you're going to open Vins there? And I was like, no, I'm not. Then they said, why? Because at that time, people had already been asking Vins to be franchised. Mm-hmm. Somebody wanted to do Vins in Ipoh, wanted to do it in Penang, let's take it overseas. And you see, in order to franchise and stuff like that, or to build outlets, you need to get infrastructure right. And we were doing a lot of infrastructure building, and I didn't want to just open another Vins because I wanted to keep Vins special for the people that we created in Taman Tun and for the visitors who come from outside, the guests who come from outside of Taman Tun. So I wanted to do something different because, of course, my taste buds has now changed. I've developed as a chef, as an owner. I've developed and I've tasted so many things. I've come back to Malaysia from Europe and I've tasted Balinese cuisine. I've tasted Vietnamese cuisine. I've tasted all sorts of Malaysian cuisine, of course. So I had all these flavor profiles in my mouth and in my system. And I said, hey, what are you going to do now? You're going to create another Vins or what? So, you know, I decided to go into a completely new restaurant, and we did Southeast Asian fusion or a medley of Southeast Asian flavors. Because if you look at the flavor profile of Southeast Asia, it is some of the most complex cuisines in the world. And we said we want to pamper people. We want them to feel this emotion. So we said, why not localize it? Call it manja. And everybody was like, hey, manja, what do you mean manja? You know, manja is Malay, and can you put it for a restaurant? And it's high-end and this. Is it a coffee shop? I said, no, I think manja is a beautiful name. And I think it will resonate with people and resonate with tourists and resonate with locals. So I think it did pretty well.
So when people talk about manja itself, there's always this term that's thrown about, the manja twist. What is the manja twist, and how do you incorporate that into the menu?
So the manja twist and the manja way of doing things is, it makes it easy for people. So if you look at the menu, it can be very, a lot of things would be take time to understand. So we always have our servers come over and explain the dish to you while you look at the menu as well, you know, and explain to you, for example, we have small, medium and large plates. How are you supposed, for 2 people, what can you do? So we'll guide you, okay, for 2 people, you can try 2 smalls, 1 medium, and that's it, and then save space for dessert. So we would sort of guide people through their meals, asking them questions, how they feel, how hungry, have they got a big appetite, or what they feel like having for today. So we do a lot of, so we share I call it tableside romance. So it's a lot of tableside romance with the guests. And in the food side, for example, we got this dish called Nigumbo stir-fried crab. And we serve it with this bird's eye chili, roasted tomatoes, a little bit of carrots, and it's this Nigumbo crab. So what we did is we handpicked the crab. It's a pain to pick crab. I'm not going to lie. You know, it's a pain to pick crab. But instead of serving the crab whole and giving them gloves and all, that's not manja. You know, manja is somebody, imagine your girlfriend or your mother picking crab for you, or in my case, my wife, picking crab for me and, you know, serving stir fry, you know, after picking it, boiling it, stir frying it, and then giving it to me, everything, all I got to do is, I mean, she's just short from feeding it to me, you know. So that is the manja way.
Even preparing it with love.
Exactly. Yes. And making it easy. Like we do this Cambodian coffee beef ribs. and we use, and it's a coffee beef ribs. So we infuse a lot of coffee into the sauce. So beef ribs, you know, of course, come with the bone and things like that. Here we roast it, slow roast it, and we debone it, and then we slice. So there's a lot of preparation goes so that you don't have to go. So when you eat it, all you're doing is having the final product and you're enjoying. You don't have to get down and dirty, because sometimes you're on a date, you want to have a glass of wine or a cocktail. You don't want to get down and dirty. You probably want to get down and dirty later, but not obviously not during the meal.
We're not done with Navin Karu just yet. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same place on Open for Business for more super honest insights into the F&B industry with the chef and CEO of Ocean Flare Group. Navin also talks about the birth of his specialized events and catering service, Sago, his badass barbecue catering arm, Big Boys Barbecue. And I kid you not, he even reveals the recipe for the perfect burger patty on air. But before we go, here are some pearls of wisdom from Navin about starting a business in F&B.
I think the first fundamental thing that you need to think about before starting an F&B business is, what is your reason for starting this business? And if your reason is profit, and if your reason is profit and profit alone, please don't start the business, because it's too much effort to get everything done to make profit. So you would really want to think first. First, you'd have to be interested in what you do. Secondly, plan. If you have the passion, you'll plan. You have to plan effectively. And every business, I plan about 6 months to a year before I even start. So do not go and get your shop lot or your space in the mall, because malls are desperate right now, and people will always want to sell their space. But you're the one going to do the hard work, and you really need to plan your concept, plan your soul of the business, understand your menu, understand your costing. And I think you need to have enough cash to run at least the first 6 months. And that's not a joke, you know. You really need to, you know, I know it's a thing that they say in F&B business, but you really need to have that 6 months capital so that your give time for people to understand your brand. And I think marketing is also really important, and let people, if you understand your soul and understand your business, you're able to translate that to other people, which I think is really important.
I've been speaking with chef and CEO of Ocean Flare Group, Navin Karu. Don't forget to join us for part two tomorrow, right after the 10 a.m. news. My name is Audrey Raja, and thank you for listening to Open for Business. Catch it tomorrow, folks. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.